Has paid WGCH a broadcasting fee, and the opinions expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this February 25th, a windy February 25th edition of Camillo's Corner. How was your weekend there, Noah?
Morning, Fred. How are you? It was good. It was good. And can't complain. Baseball started, right? The games are finally underway, which on a day like today with the wind and the garbage, you know, by me and everything has been going all over the place. Yeah, you know, it's nice to know that we're getting closer slowly but surely to opening day, which is what, about a month or so now, right?
Well, it's earliest ever, March 28th. So, yeah, we're almost there. I was watching a couple games this week.
Yeah, you had to, right?
You really did. And it feels good. It makes you, just makes you, it's like having cheesecake, which I don't have all the time. It's such a treat. And yet, when you haven't watched live baseball in God knows how many months now, it kind of rejuvenates you.
Yeah, it certainly does. I had you're crazy. It's like you're taking my weekend a little bit. I had a nice Italian cheesecake, too, like the old school stuff. That was real good. Watched a little baseball.
Well, funny you mention that. Now, this weekend I went to Anna Maria's in Larchmont, New York, on Chatsworth Avenue.
And I've heard of this place.
It's a small little place. That's how you know an Italian place is really good, by the size of it. If it's very small, bet on it that it's good quality food. And she does the cooking herself. She was the chef at Gracie Mansion. In fact, we'll get her on this show because she was the personal chef for many mayors, including Dinkins, Rudy Giuliani, and Bloomberg. But she was very close with Rudy Giuliani. She was actually also Donald Trump's personal chef for 1 year. But Rudy is the person that she was closest with, and she had great stories. And
it's a pretty nice list, too.
Well, to be the chef at Gracie Mansion, you got to be pretty good. And I'll definitely make a note to call her this week and to get her on next Monday. But the food was great. And it's just there's nothing like being in a small little restaurant, and the food is fresh, and the chef comes out and actually hangs out with you for a little bit. So you know,
have you been there before or no?
No. Bobby Capazzo, who's actually going to be calling in next week, our great photographer here in Greenwich. Bobby recommended it, and of course they popped in that night. So it was
right.
So it's a place where you actually could even sit at the bar. It has that comfort.
Oh, that's good.
Feeling to it.
Yeah, sure.
But did that, and also we had the anti-tolls rally up in Stamford on Saturday, and right before that was the ribbon cutting grand opening of the new Lebanon school, which. The Greenwich delegation was very proud to work on in Hartford, securing the funding for that $24 million led by former state rep Mike Pacino and Senator Scott France and Representative Livy Florin did a great job with that. And it was nice to see it come to fruition and all the happy kids there as the school opened up. And then it was off to the cold weather in Stamford for the anti-tolls. And I got to tell you, there was a lot of people there was a lot more people there than last year.
You were pretty busy.
Yeah, no, there was literally, I mean, I've been to several rallies over the years. I've never seen that many people honking their horns.
Where was it?
It was at the Government Center in Stamford. Okay. Just a great crowd on hand, but the response was overwhelming. They're not popular, these tolls, and for good reason. So we were talking about that last week with the governor's budget proposal and this toll bill. You have not only the possibility of paying tolls, but you're going to have increased bills from your service people and your electrician, your plumbers, just you name it, because they're going to be passing on that cost to you, the oil man, or the it just one guy in Greenwich who owns a small oil delivery business estimated his cost would be $72,000 a year. We got an email from a trucking industry where one company said it was over $300,000 because they're on the road.
Sure,
and
that
they have
much.
That many.
What was the total too for the teacher? Right, you used an example of a teacher.
Teacher
coming
from
they
said
Trumbull, they
were,
right?
From Trumbull to Greenwich was $1,620. Now, under the new revised proposal from Governor Lamont, that may be slightly altered, but not by much. So, and then you couple that with all these sales taxes. I mean, I'm almost everything. So it'll get quite expensive to live here in Connecticut if all this goes through. So we're going to have a busy few months ahead of us in Hartford. And probably not an easy few months, no.
I was going to say, is there one topic, because there seems to be a lot now, obviously, with it being a little bit of a transitional period. Is there one topic that you're really most... I don't know if necessarily excited is the best word, but one that you're, I guess, most passionate about.
I'm passionate about lots of things, but one thing that's really fascinating me is the casino debate, because last year I was never on the public safety committee.
Okay.
So now I'm getting the testimony, and I'm being lobbied extensively, all of us are, by both sides of this.
A popular guy.
Oh, very popular, especially right before a vote. Not so much after the vote. So you have the lobbyists who are representing the two tribes, and then the lobbyists representing MGM that wants an open bid process.
Right.
It's something that, it's complicated, especially if you're not aware of the compact that we had 25 years ago, the state made with the tribes. They've been great partners for the state. But the compact was not the most wasn't advantageous to it could have been much better, could have benefited the taxpayers a little bit more. That said, we still have gotten in a quarter of a century about $8 billion from them.
Not bad.
No, it's diminishing now because of the casinos that have opened up across our borders. But it's this: do we undo this compact, which means it'll be an open bid, but then you lose the revenue from the tribes, but do you make that up by having an? It goes back and forth, and it's really fascinating. And you could see the legislators go back and forth in their opinions on this, about which way they're going to vote.
It's a tough one. It's got to be. I mean, especially because if you think about it too, and the competition is one thing too. I mean, and obviously I'm not as up to date with everything as you are, but. It's one of those situations where, obviously now you've seen how, in a way, a deal is played out and whether or not there's willing to take kind of a gamble, right, in mm-hmm. being able to lose that but make really what the whole would be back and then some. So
right, and because
it's kind of ironic that it's a gamble, isn't it?
Right, and I don't think you're gonna ever see the first casino – and first casinos made, because now with Empire City opening up, and
right.
that's just cut off that.
And now you've got, where is it, the Monticello area, right? I think, isn't there
yes.
a Roosevelt?
Catskill.
Yeah, something like that, too.
So it's shrinking. So
yeah.
You're not really going to be building huge casinos like Mohegan Sun and the other one up there.
Foxwoods,
sure. Because it's just not going to – it'll be empty.
Right.
So you got to do a smaller one like they did – the smaller version like they want to do in East Hartford. And, they're putting about $300 million into that versus, $2 billion. So it's still big. It's still a lot. But it's – you're not going to have – because of – you're almost cannibalizing yourself. You have too many – when we were in business years ago in the hauling business, there was an old saying, you never make as much money as your first truck when that's on the road. And that's true. Your first truck always makes you the most money. And then when you add other ones on, you make money, but it's never going to be as much. And the same thing with these casinos. And it's something you only experience by being in business.
Oh, sure. It's got to be, I'm sure, entertaining, too, in some capacity as well, just because it really the debate seems to be so – so close that really I'm sure that you know, you're probably going to have some interesting outliers from both ends of the argument to really kind of try to sway one you know, person such as yourself to join their side.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's really exciting. So I'm looking forward to more hearings and then ultimately a final vote on this issue. But right now we have a caller. I think it's Joanne Messina. Joanne, good morning.
Thanks. Good morning, Fred. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling in on this windy Monday morning. And thank you for all the work you've done. I know when people drive around a lot of neighborhoods in Greenwich, they can thank you and the people at the Conservancy there for putting up all these beautiful trees that are lining our streets. And now it's back, the issue is back in the spotlight because of something that DOT has done along our highways. And I know you've been involved with that, and I know you wanted to chat a little bit about that this morning.
That's great. And yes, let me say that it's the public-private partnership with the town that has really allowed us to plant over 3,500 trees in the last decade or so since we've been established. So we've been working very closely with the town. But yeah, now Connecticut DOT has started very strong cutting. We might say clear cutting. I don't think they would say that. But along I-95 and the Merritt Parkway, and we do have some concerns about it, and I've gotten huge amounts of calls about the change in the look of 95.
Yeah, it's you know, and it probably isn't clear cutting here, but it's a little too much in the opinion of a lot of us. But they have done clear cutting, you know, stretches along 91 where the trees were so far off the road, and in some places, some areas in, down in a gully, which had no really little chance of reaching the highway if they fell. So I just didn't still don't understand why those areas were clear cut, because when you're driving on the road, you take for granted that the north and southbound lanes are divided, that they're there because they're divided by beautiful trees. But once those trees are gone and the cover is not there anymore, then you realize how much you miss them.
Absolutely. And I'm getting calls from people who are saying, you know, all of a sudden they have this incredible noise in their house from the road that they never had before because of the buffer of the trees. And I don't know that the DOT always is really concerned about all of the unintended consequences of clearing them. They're looking and they're saying, well, you know, a car goes off the road and it might hit a tree and there may be damage, you know, or death, or a tree may come down. But they don't realize that day to day, the roots of the trees are helping with the flooding. The tree itself is helping with buffering noise and filtering the air for those people who are living right along 95. And it's a balancing act that sometimes I think they're not really taking into consideration.
No, you're absolutely right. It's there's lots of benefits beyond aesthetics to having the trees there. And I know you've reached out to DOT as of high, and we're supposed to meet with them this week at some point. But it's because of the Hartford schedule's increase, and which not many options, so we're going to try and shoot for Friday. But I know,
great.
Yeah, no, we're going to work as hard as we can to get some type of concession on their part to get something replaced there, because again, they're arguing is, well, right now it's wintertime and it's easier to see through because there's no leaves. That is true. But there's still a lot of areas where trees can be planted, and maybe where some trees and limbs came off that were far away from the road. The ones that are on the edge of the road, 95, I get that, a public safety issue. But beyond that, I think they went a little bit too far with this. And I have to say, DOT has always been very good about contacting the state delegation ahead of time when there's projects. The only time we don't get a warning is when it involves trees, which is...
Isn't that interesting? And we met as a result of the Merritt Parkway work, and they were talking 30 feet off the Merritt Parkway and just picking and choosing trees and not, you know, just taking those of substance, unfortunately, but those that they thought were of older age or in some way compromised. We did speak about those who had invasives on them, and, you know, obviously there are some trees that it'll help that they'll take them down. But, you know, they seem to be picking and choosing some on the merit, where on 95 I didn't see that. And it didn't help that the town had this sewer project prior to this work starting and cleared a lot of the trees, or most of the trees, between exits 3 and 4 on 95.
Oh, yeah, probably all of them southbound. That was, unfortunately, you when you go through North Jersey, you know, where all the old smokestacks are there, and all the pollution and being emitted, and it's just
it by the Meadowlands.
By the Meadowlands, yeah. The industrial park.
Yes.
Even though it's not that bad, it reminds me of that. And this is Greenwich, and it's something has got to be done there, because being exposed like that really took away, not only for the people that live there, their privacy and their views, but also just as a entry and a viewpoint from people passing through Greenwich. That's now their one of their visions of Greenwich, and you don't want that. We take such great pride in our town, and to have those trees just clear cut like that without any plan at all right now to put anything back. So I know there's not much room there, but certainly when the weather gets warmer, we'll continue to speak with them and see what exactly can be put up there. And also, another thing, a pet peeve of mine is, I think we need a zero tolerance policy for graffiti. And it's when you go through Bruce Park and along the highway there, you see a lot of it. It's been there for years. I've gotten DOT to take care of some of it on under the bridges, but unfortunately, their solution is to blotch it out, which looks just as bad. And they said they can't paint the whole thing. It's too costly because it's high on, you know, those underpasses. So I said, well, why don't you two-tone it? Just go up 10 feet and go right across. It'll look like – it won't look as nice as if it was only one color, but certainly it would look better. It would almost look like it was done on purpose. But putting the blotches there, just drives me crazy. But
put trees in front of it to block it.
Well, you can't because there's concrete there. But it's along the highway there, it's really unsightly now. So in addition to not having the trees there, you're looking at graffiti all over rocks, and just not the look that we want here for our town that we love and take great pride in.
It's really not, and you're right. The town, many organizations, you know, really work hard at having both the aesthetics and the health benefits of our natural resources. And when I spoke with DOT, I said that many in Greenwich would probably assist, including the Greenwich Tree Conservancy, in replanting some of the areas, because they were very clear on the fact that they had a limited budget and they were just going to be taking down trees for 2 weeks, and that's all they could do. So I was questioning things like, well, can you give us some idea of what the number of trees were you were taking down, and then possibly we can replant or assist you to replant. So they didn't say no, but I haven't heard from them.
Yeah, that's, I knew that was going to be the answer, because, there's not much money in state government. But DOT, as we've found out over the years, has had a spending problem where we spend a lot more in comparison to the other 49 states, and not always with great results. So hopefully the new commissioner, Joe Giletti, who's a Rocky Hill guy, good guy, formerly with Metro North, will address that. And I know the governor in his speech last week to the General Assembly referenced the fact that, you know, we spend, he didn't mention the numbers, but I will, $100,000 per mile on administrative costs, when the national average is $9,600.
Wow.
So it's 9.5 times the national average. Plus, we spent $750 million to put in the New Britain busway for only 9.1 miles of road, and they tore up light rail to do it, and it's not even that well used. So that's the type of thing we really need to stop doing and spend more wisely. And then maybe there'll be more money to put up, barriers and mostly hopefully green barriers and trees, rather than just taking them down and leaving them down.
Right. Exactly.
And also, I want to thank you for what you and your organization have done in neighborhoods like Havemeyer Park, putting up all those trees and making a nice tree lines, you know, areas that it's, you know, something you'd see in a movie. Noah, it's really nice to be able to drive down and see on the edge of the road. And in our street, people who move there sometimes don't even know that the town owns the first 12 feet, I believe.
Depends on
the street. And ours is big because it was going to be where the woods are, the Shangala Preserve was going to be, originally was going to be a supermarket. So the road was meant to be wider. It is it's the widest one there, but it was going to be even wider. So they own 12 to 15 feet in. So you all were nice enough to put some trees there. And I had one neighbor, who was a great guy, there was three that mistakenly got put in his property, and he didn't want to clean up the leaves. So I asked, and you guys came there, and we relocated them. And there was a lot of people eager to take them. So it was his loss, but I understand. It was a mistake, and he woke up one morning, he had three trees there, and all he could see was, "Oh my God, I got to rake now."
Well, we really would like to hear from people, from your listeners, as to anyone who feels that their street needs some trees. And yes, we do. We are planting right now only on public lands, so it is along the roadways. But we're doing that all over town, and you know, we'll continue to do that. We'll be starting up again in about a month. And so, yes, we need as many sites as we can get from people.
Well, there's a friend in the studio was sitting next to me who lives up the road from me, and she just signaled to me, Ashley Newey, that she would like a tree in her front yard. So two, because she actually, one border, she has actually a frontage on Halsey and Marshall. So it's actually perfect spot for two more there. So
perfect.
I'll have her reach out to you this week, and you have any extra ones there, they'll be gladly accepted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love to do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And you're welcome to call here anytime to update us on your good works and anything that you need, you'd like to have put out there for the good citizens of our town.
Wonderful. Thanks, Fred. And that restaurant sounded great at the beginning of your show. I'll have to go try it.
Anna Maria's in Larchmont on Chatsworth. And I just got a text that she will be coming on the show next week with Bobby Capazzo. So listen next week, but you have to go there. It's really good.
Wonderful.
All right.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Joanne. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Joanne Messina. And we will be back with a special guest on the phone and then also in studio.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
A high wind warning till 6 o'clock this evening. Partly sunny, very windy and colder today. A high of 35, wind gusts 50 to 55 miles per hour. Clear, windy, cold tonight, 15 to 20. Wind gusts 40 to 50 miles per hour. Sunny, cold tomorrow, 25 to 30. And Wednesday, more clouds. Snow developing in the afternoon, 25 to 30. And becoming partly sunny, 35 on Thursday. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackman on 1490 WGCH.
Do you have boxes of old, deteriorating VHS tapes, film reels, photo albums, and slide carousels at home that you haven't preserved to digital yet? Everpresent, local family's top choice for digitizing, is making it easy to finally get this project done by coming right to your door. They're visiting homes and offices throughout the Fairfield County area from February 27th to March 1st, offering complimentary pickups for aging home movies and photos. This family-owned business will transport everything to their local lab and use the best technology to make your family legacy safe and shareable for generations to come. DVD, USB, and private family sharing links available. Visit everpresent.com or call 866-363-3351 to reserve a home pickup on February 27th, 28th, or March 1st. That's everpresent.com or 866-363-3351 to get this important project taken care of for good.
This is Margaret Walsh of Greenwich Library. The Byram Schubert Library is pleased to welcome Connecticut State Troubadour Nikita Waller for a fun and enjoyable family music night. Nikita Waller's diverse musical journey has taken her through choral groups, musical theater, the Hart School of Music, gospel in church, and mentoring and performing with many independent artists. Nikita is an experienced studio session artist and as a performer has lent her vocal talents to projects with Grammy and Emmy award-winning producers. The state troubadour is an honorary position and functions as an ambassador of music and promotes cultural literacy among Connecticut citizens. This entertaining performance will take place on Thursday, February 28th at 7 p.m. in the community room of the Byram Schubert Library. Please call 531-0426 if you have any questions. I'm Margaret Walsh of Greenwich Library on 1490 WGCH.
We love to talk sports on WGCH, and we know Greenwich is a great sports town. This is Rob Adams, the host of Doubleheader with, well, Rob Adams. Weekday afternoons at 3, I'll guide you through the very latest in the world of sports and more with guests and commentary. Call us and let's make it interactive. High school, college, youth sports, the pros. Let's talk about it.
This is John Sullivan. Whenever I'm back in my hometown of Greenwich, I always check out the sports broadcasts with Rob Adams on 1490 WGCH.
WGCH 1490.
Okay, we're back with this segment of Camillo's Corner, and on the phone, my friend David Stemmerman. Good morning, David.
Hey, Fred. How are you today?
Very good, David. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to call in. I had the good fortune of seeing you last week at the governor's address, and it didn't surprise me that you were up there, having run for governor a few months back. You didn't go away. You're staying involved, and it's much appreciated. It's a welcome sight, and we thank you for your dedication to our state.
Well, the problems that you and I know all too well didn't stop with Election Day, so I'm glad that you're continuing to serve up in the legislature, and I'm trying to do my part, too.
Well, we're grateful for that. And so what did you think about the governor's proposals?
So, you know, the governor, who a lot of people in town know, is a good guy. He's well-intentioned. He lays out some good goals. He wants us to grow. He wants to balance the budget. He wants transportation infrastructure to be improved. But when he gets to the part where he talks about what he's going to actually do about it, you know, you've been in that chamber many times. You must have thought it was Groundhog Day. he actually talked at the beginning of his speech saying, I don't want my budget address to be Groundhog Day, but when you get down to it, the same thing that you've heard from Governor Malloy for the last 8 years of we got a budget problem and we need more revenues, need more taxes, we need more tolls. It's going to be tough to fund services. It's sort of the same old, and I'm concerned that giving another dosage of the same toxic brew we've had for the last 8 years is going to leave us in the same place we're in today.
Yeah, well, I had the same reaction as you. It started off for the first 90 seconds pretty good. I'm thinking, okay, this is not going to be as bad as I thought. Then it went south from there. But what people don't realize is, it was even worse looking at the proposal than listening to it. Just about everything under the sun is going to be taxed with a sales tax. Some things that are exempt from a sales tax will now not be exempt if this passes. The tolls, which is what people are missing, it's not going to be only where you, the driver, is paying the toll, but you're going to be paying increased prices for all goods and services, because we're already getting the estimates from many businesses around the state where there's 100,000, 200,000, in some cases 300,000 in estimated costs, because they have many trucks and they're on the road all day long. And it's really going to be a place that's going to be unaffordable to live in if everything were to go in through. Now, he did say, I know you probably hate a lot of this stuff, so let's talk, and we plan on doing that. So I don't think all this stuff will go through, but I fear, because of the numbers up there now, that some of these things that are not so good will get through.
Well, it's the same story and the same tired solutions, which is 8 years ago when we were facing a major budget deficit, Dan Malloy said, well, no, we're going to all hold our nose, but we're going to have to raise taxes. And he put through the biggest tax increase in history. And I remember at the time one of his advisors said to him, you know, if you're going to raise taxes at all, go for it. Just raise them, raise everything you can find. And that way we're going to raise so much revenues, you're going to have a surplus, and it's all going to be good. But that's not how it turns out. To your point, this has real costs. And one of the meetings I had during the campaign that sticks in my mind was I met in Naugatuck with this company that makes metal fasteners. And this was one of the key ways that our economy grew and we employed people. And the way that they compete is they compete against companies all over the world. And it's a combination of they got to have the right price and they've got to be able to deliver it on time. And the guy had on his desk a mailer from the state of South Carolina that was offering to move him to South Carolina. And he said, you know, my costs are high as it is. I'm trying to decide whether to move or whether to retire. Well, let's think about what his world looks like now. So to your point, the tolls are not just paid by drivers, but anytime he moves his product, there's the cost of that. So now he's less cost competitive. If he has a bunch of very talented, skilled workers, which he does, and you get paid medical leave, he's going to have some of his people leave and he's at risk of not being able to deliver on time. And then the last piece is if he says, okay, well, now I got to train new people to come in, and those people aren't very productive at the start. Well, now he's got to pay a higher minimum wage. And you put it all together, and I'm concerned that this guy is going to say, it's time to move to South Carolina, or I'm just going to close. And that means that we're going to have fewer jobs, fewer opportunities in the community, and fewer tax dollars. And that's the cycle that we go through when we take this approach.
I couldn't agree more. And I was down in South Carolina right before Christmas. And, you know, it's a very welcoming state. And, you know, they would be only all too happy to see this pass, you know, untouched, because the states of Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, especially South Carolina and Florida, will really benefit from it. And I know you had a great plan when you were running. And in fact, even the Hartford Current, of all papers, singled you out as having some real good ideas and solutions they thought would be viable.
So let's talk about not only being the party or the group or the people who just say no, but about presenting solutions. And I think that that's one of the clear messages for me coming out of this election, which is that we do have problems in this state, and just saying no is not enough. So let's talk about the roads and the trains and transportation, which matters not only so much to the state, but particularly in a place like Greenwich and in Fairfield County. The appeal to some of tolls is the view this is the only way we can get our roads to move faster or our trains to move faster, and we need to do that. And I agree that we need to do that. But my view is the way we do that is not just to pour more money down the same inefficient Department of Transportation. It's to change our way of doing business. And the way we can do business is like they do in all over the world and increasingly in other parts of the country, which is public-private partnerships. And I was pleased to see Governor Lamont say he was open to this idea. And so what does that mean? It means that you could have a private business make a proposal of how to add lanes to our highways and to build them on time, on budget, for much lower cost, and then to maintain them at a fraction of the cost of what we're paying for today. And so my thinking for a project like this is rather than starting by saying we need more money, we should do it the way that a family or a business would do it. We say, what are our priorities? What's the most cost-effective way we can get them done? Is there some way to prioritize, to economize? In this case, can we privatize? And then that's the way that we're going to get these projects done. And by providing that kind of vision of adding lanes to 95, of how we're going to get the train from New York City to Stanford in 30 minutes, New Haven to 60, then we have a story to tell of how we make people's lives better rather than just being people who say no all the time.
Now, David, also, is that the lease model or the management model when you talk about having a company come in and build and manage it for us?
So this is the beauty of a public-private partnership is it's incredibly flexible, and we as a state, as a community, we can decide how we want to have it done. So it can range anything from a very discrete construction project. So, for example, for in Norwalk, you've got this proposed project to rebuild the walk bridge. And it's being projected at $1 billion in cost. Well, I suspect if you put that out to a single private bid and you're open to different design solutions, you could get that for a fraction of the cost. At the other end of the spectrum is you could take some portion of highway and say we're going to turn it over to a private operator, and you're in charge of the new construction, and you're in charge of the operation and maintenance of it for a period of time. And it's just like we did with our service stations. And if you want an example in Connecticut of one of the areas where this is working well, one of the few things that actually looks good for our transportation infrastructure is our service stations. And we turn those over to private operators, and those private operators, they invested in them. They are much better services, much better maintained. And those are no longer costs of the state. They're being run by business.
Right, and the state would get a fee, depending on the arrangement, but it would be staffed by their employees, so the state would not have the obligation of not only salaries but of pensions and benefits.
Correct. So there are a whole series of benefits. In some cases, we're talking about major construction projects. So if we want to get the train from New York City to Stanford in 30 minutes and New Haven in 60, part of what we're talking about is construction, not only the track work, but in some cases we have these movable bridges that we're going to need to replace. And so delivering those on time and on budget is typically not the strength of the government, but is of the private sector. But the second is also about operating them properly. So one of the reasons why our trains are as slow as they are is we have all this excess time, what's called padding, built into the schedule because they're just not used to running it as tightly as you would in a business. And so turning that over where there's that kind of responsibility, accountability, expertise, we can get a much better outcome. And the last point that you raise is about the pensions. And I hope we can spend a few minutes on that, because while it may not be the most scintillating topic, it really, to me, is at the core of why we have these chronic budget crises. And unless until we really talk about it, we're going to be stuck in the same mess.
Sure, absolutely. I think the pensions are something that's on everybody's mind. And I know you had a plan to address that, and I'm sure the audience would love to hear that.
So the first part of dealing with any problem is recognizing that you have a problem. And the scope of the problem here is just mind-blowing. So just I know most people don't like to talk about numbers, but just to give a little orientation, our budget in Connecticut is about $20 billion a year. And if we were the average state in the country, we'd spend $1 out of 10 on debt and on our benefits. So that would be roughly $2 billion. Well, in this state, because for decades we had governors and state employee union bosses reach agreements on benefits that were unaffordable, and critically, both the government and workers failed to put aside the money to fund them, we now spend, in this next year, projected $5.4 billion on debt and pensions. And just to give, again, a sense for just for the state employees, the amount we're paying for the state employees to fund the health care and benefits for those people working are $300 million a year. The catch-up for what we failed to put aside in the past is $1.5 billion. The budget deficit alone is $1.5 billion. The numbers that they're talking about for the sales tax and the tolls that they're asking is all essentially going to fill that hole. So this is, and as a whole, we're spending close to $3.5 billion more per year than the average state because of this issue. And unless and until we are talking honestly about how big a problem it is and talking about what we can do about it, I think we're going to be in the same kind of mess we're in today.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, like a dog chasing its tail. It's hard to catch up when you're looking at that, and you're not making the really tough decisions to address that. And that's what I was saying during the weeks and months leading up to especially the months leading up to the fall election, was somebody running for governor should just say, you know what, I'm going to take the James K. Polk example and say I'm going to publicly serve one term. Here's what I'm going to get done. And you'll be wildly unpopular in those 4 years, but then history will judge you very well, because history is not judging lots of former governors well right now, and legislatures, for not addressing these issues. And unfortunately, you know, the tough decisions, you have to have a thick skin. And as you mentioned, Ned's a good guy, very decent man. But he's just, as you said, it's mirroring the failed policies of the previous 8 years. And unless there's any drastic change on these proposals, it's not going to get any better. And it's going to make the job of the next governor that much harder.
Well, we are in such a tough spot now where we have people and businesses leaving before we put these tax increases in place. I'm concerned of a downward spiral where it just gets tougher and tougher to come out. The other part I'm worried about, which I think is also lost in this discussion, is that the state employees and retirees are at risk of having their future pension checks bouncing on the current pace. And this was another of the big moments for me on the campaign trail, which was I had a state trooper at the Lebanon State Fair say, Stemmerman, you're the guy who wants to take away my pension. I said, no, I'm the guy who wants to save your pension, because if we were here with two of your colleagues, we've only put aside enough money for one of you, and for the other two, we've put aside nothing. And if we don't fix this problem, the time is going to come where the checks aren't going to clear. And that's what we're talking about here. And the decisions that we need to make are ones where, yes, the taxpayer is going to have to do its part, but so do the employees as well. And so we can't be in a state where Susan Herbst retires as the president of UConn and gets a pension of $300,000 plus for the rest of her life, gets an annual cost of living adjustment, where Richard Blumenthal, who has earned his retirement as a former attorney general of the state, but he shouldn't have health benefits that are richer than they are for a member of the United States Senate, leading him to keep his state health care. It's just, it's not right, it's unaffordable, and unless and until we do something about it, taxes are going to keep going up, and we're going to continue to be in trouble.
Yeah, you know, there's great points all around there, and a lot of us were talking about addressing those things that you just referenced. In some cases, prospectively, going forward, not even, you know, trying to undo some of the agreements that have been made that have been, you know, hurtful to the Connecticut economy and taxpayer. But there's been, you know, a resistance to even addressing future hires, and that's the problem. So the work is cut out for us. We appreciate all you're doing, and I'm glad to see you're still on the scene and that you're staying in the debate, because we need your voice up there and here, David. So thank you for all you're doing, and please come back and visit us again here in Camilla's Corner.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Fred, for all that you're doing, too.
Thank you, David. That was my friend David Stemmerman calling in. Had some great ideas in the past campaign, and we'll continue to espouse those in the months and years ahead. We are now going to take a break and be back with our final segment of Camilla's Corner.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
High wind warning until 6 o'clock this evening. A partly sunny, very windy, colder day today. High temperature around 35. Wind gusts 50 to 55 miles per hour. Clear, windy, cold tonight, 15 to 20. Wind gusts 40 to 50 miles per hour. Sunny and cold tomorrow, 25 to 30. And Wednesday, more clouds. Snow developing in the afternoon, 25 to 30. Becoming partly sunny near 35 on Thursday. We don't have to worry about dodging tree limbs or trees or anything flying in the roads on a windy day like today. When you take the Port Jeff Ferry to Long Island, New York, experience the great season by just relaxing aboard the Port Jeff Ferry. Call 888-443-3779. I'm meteorologist Bill Jack, women on 1490 WGCH.
You gotta be so cold to make it in this world. Yeah, you're a natural, living your life cutthroat. You gotta be so cold. Yeah, you're a natural.
Alexa, play Imagine Dragons.
Okay.
'Cause you're a natural.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get access to over 50 million songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
And now today's Bob Evans foodie lesson, nostalgic eating. Did you know there's a strong link between sense and emotional memory? The smell of different foods can evoke vivid and detailed emotional memories of our past. For example, the scent of a deep-fried corn dog may remind us of a state fair in the summer. Because odor-evoked memories tend to be positive, the smell improves the mood and produces feelings of social connectedness. And now a word from Bob Evans.
You're the family chef, but with homework, practices, email, getting a good meal on the table is tough. Sometimes the best choice is the easy choice. Delicious Bob Evans mashed potatoes and mac and cheese, made with ingredients like real milk, butter, potatoes, and cheese. Bob Evans sides are ready in the microwave in 6 minutes, and they're the perfect complement to any meal. Once your family tries them, it'll be love at first bite. Get Bob Evans sides today in the refrigerated section at your favorite grocery store.
Bob Evans down on the farm.
Let's have a chat about your debit card, the card you use for the things you buy every day. What if you could get cash back every time you bought those things? Well, now you can. Introducing Discover Cashback Debit. Just open a Discover bank account and start earning 1% cash back on up to $3,000 in debit card purchases every month automatically. Plus, there are no monthly fees or minimum balances. Now you can get cash back on the way you like to pay. Open a Discover bank account and get the debit card with cash back. Go to discoverbank.com/debit. Limitations apply. Excludes money market accounts. Discover Bank, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler. Join us every weekday on this station between 4 and 6 o'clock p.m. Hey, if you're thinking about it, we're talking about it. We're listening to what's happening in our community, and we want to hear from you as well. We talk politics, science, and the arts. We consult with experts, and we want your opinion. So join us every weekday. I'm Lisa Wexler right here at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Okay, we're back with the final moments of this week's Camilla's Corner. And in the studio, waiting patiently, is my good friend Ashley Newey, a neighbor. And Ashley has been involved with really a sad story that we're hoping for a happy outcome with. And it concerns a Labrador named Reese. He's 3 years old. And a beautiful dog who belongs to a family in Old Greenwich, and they went away for a couple of days, and somebody was watching, a professional dog sitter was watching Reese, and the dog went missing. And You want to take it from there, Ashley. When did Reese go missing?
Well, we're not exactly sure of to what day, but it was over Thanksgiving break.
So all those cold months.
Yes.
He's been out there. And so we're hoping that somebody has him and maybe not...
They don't know that she has a loving home or something. So we're trying to get the word out that she does have a home and they do want her back. They're not going to stop searching. And, you know, we need to get her back.
And you've done a great job, you and your friends, putting these posters all over the place with a reward, $3,000, and a phone number to call, which is 914-629-5482. And Reese was last seen in the Babcock property.
Well, not necessarily. We've gotten many different stories as to where she was lost. We haven't been able to get the full story. There's different versions. So it could have been in Cranberry Park. It could have been in Babcock. We really have no idea.
Interesting, because I know when originally came out, the dog watcher said it was in the Babcock property. And
right.
So people were up there searching and
yes.
setting up cameras and...
Yep, we've set out a lot of food stations for dogs with cameras and nothing. A lot of sightings,
a lot of healthy coyotes out there right now.
Yes, they're and all, fox.
And foxes.
I was just going to say, yeah, you really have to be feeding the neighborhood.
Yeah.
No, I think a lot. I mean, there's so many great stories out there to give hope to this. There was a dog named Sinatra that got lost in Brooklyn about a year and a half ago. And was found, it was chipped. And is Reese chipped?
Yes, Reese chipped.
That's great. So it was chipped, and somebody found him walking in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah.
And the family in Brooklyn got Sinatra back a year and a half later because of the chip.
Yeah.
And so there's always hope, and I think that you have to hold on to that hope, but especially with the chips, because when we were growing up, there was no such thing as chipping a dog.
And people don't realize that these dogs can travel far.
They can travel great distances. Yeah. I mean, look at that. And remember that mountain lion went 1,500 miles.
Yeah.
So dogs can travel hundreds of miles. And, it's thank God we haven't heard any reports where, he's been hit by a car.
Right. No, we've gotten nothing about that.
So that's a good sign. I know there was my friend Tina Zinn, who rescues all these German shepherds. And it was a sad story a few months ago where she had the dog for a couple months, and the dog got used to her. And the dog was adopted out in Brantford and escaped after one day and got hit. Was heading back to Brookfield.
Wow.
It had made its way along, and then on the highway got hit by a car. So dogs, they have an unbelievable sense of direction and smell, and they, if they can, they'll get home on their own. But we're just hoping that maybe somebody has Reese
and doesn't know that she has this loving home and they want her back, and they're not going to stop really until they find her and get her back.
And you have a great social media presence on Facebook.
Yes, it's all over Facebook.
Twitter?
I don't think it's not on Twitter yet, but it's been
on. Well, you could tweet it out though.
Yeah.
Are you on Twitter?
I'm actually not on Twitter.
You should be on Twitter. you should. I'll tweet it out.
Okay.
I'll tweet this out today. But also even Instagram.
Yep, it's ever, yeah.
So people are on that all the time. And I have an app here on my phone, Rover, Finding Rover.
It's on Rover,
it is,
it's on
okay.
Rover.
Which is great. I look at these things and, wow, somebody was found. So,
yeah.
So you're doing all the right things. And please, if anybody out there sees a beautiful Labrador, about 3 years old,
female,
named Reese, please call 914-629-5482. Ask for Jill, the owner. And there's a reward in it too if you are lucky enough to find Reese for us. So thank you, Ashley, for coming in.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll have you on when he's found and safe and sound. All righty, Noah, Teddy Roosevelt, all good here. See you all next week in March on Camillo's Corner. Take care.
The station you grew up with. 1490 WGCH Greenwich.
Trade talk surge, the ref's bad call. I'm Michael Toscano. Chinese stock markets had their best day in 3 years in Monday trading, and Wall Street is seeing stocks move higher.